The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Hello, I am Millie.
And I'm Bailey.
And I'm Frances.
And we are
the Musketeers
from Motueka High School.
That was Green Day with their song American Idiot, which you may be able to find quite a few of those around the US as of now. With that, welcome back to the Musketeers. I'm Frances, and today we will be having Brent Maru, Motueka Ward Councillor for TDC, in the studio. Welcome, Brent. Thanks for coming in today. Congratulations on winning your seat on Tasman District Council.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why did you want to become a councillor?
Yeah, good question, I guess. I've always been interested in local government. I've always been interested in the things that local government do because essentially it touches us every day in some way, in some form, whether it's the road we drive on, the footpath we walk on. For a lot of us, the water that comes in, the water that goes out. So I've always been interested. And you know, the honest truth is somebody has to do it. So I've never believed in complaining if you're not willing to step up and do that sort of leadership stuff yourself.
Were you disappointed that Māori wards weren't voted in by Tasman voters in this last election?
Yeah, it's probably no surprise I was gutted. I possibly, if I was honest, saw some of the rhetoric around some of the community conversations and was a little bit nervous. And I actually thought we'd grown up a lot more than what we had in terms of the vote. But the most important thing for me, and it's, we didn't really achieve it, was getting people engaged to vote. So you know, that's the view of the people of the time, and it's just a little bit more about more education stuff. But no, I was gutted. Congratulations to Nelson Whakatū who got that through, but for Marlborough and Tasman, we didn't get there yet.
Do you believe there was any misinformation spread about?
I think there was some focus on poor information, is probably a better way of putting it. So you know, for me, I'm on the general role, so I have absolutely nothing to gain by supporting a Māori ward seat, other than often told the story about my dad, who was on the Māori role, and in a general election he could vote in that way, but actually at local government he never voted, and whether he just never related to local government, didn't see himself there or people that represented him there, I'm not sure. But I'm just gutted in terms of we have a ward system that's spread around our district that gives different representations to different people from rural settings to isolated communities, and it's just another one of those mechanisms to get diversity around the table. So I think there was a focus on poor information through that.
Some people think that there is no difference between Māori wards and having an elected representative who is Māori. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, I'm of Māori descent, so my dad travelled down to Motueka in the late 60s from Waikato. So my Māori ancestry is from Maniapoto, from the North Island, and from the Waikato. And so half of my genealogy is Māori, and the other half is very European from my mum's side. And interestingly, 95% of my upbringing has been through my European side. So whilst I present absolutely as part Māori and proud to be that, my upbringing and my view of the world isn't necessarily representative of a Te Ao Māori view. So that's one of the problems and the naivety of people that have not supported the Māori roles is by seeing me, they say, oh, we've got a Māori representative. Yes, but you've also got a European representative. So it's the awkwardness of trying to brand people in different boxes. So, you know, we are very lucky to have eight iwi in the top of the south in terms of that active. That most of them have had settlements and are very active in the business world. And just to have that wider representation is very helpful. And I guess where Nelson had an advantage is that they had the opportunity to see Kahu and train for one term. And so that may have had a bearing on why Nelson did get it across the line and Tasman didn't.
What are the advantages of Māori wards?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to turn it around and say that I can't come up with many disadvantages of having a Māori ward. And it does come back to that diversity of representation. It does come back to the candidates that have been put forward are absolutely whakapapa back to Motueka or top of the south. And I've got to be really careful in this in terms of, you know, my personal views and not necessarily my views as a councillor, because my views of a councillor have to respect the representation review that went through and the process that people voted on. So that I just need to qualify that today we're talking about my personal views as Brent, who just happens to be almost a councillor because I've not been sworn in yet.
What do you think are some of the main issues for Tasman ratepayers this time around?
Oh, look, they're vast. I guess if you talk big picture challenges is that we've got a government that's currently reforming the Resource Management Act and a whole lot of reform around all the rules that basically councils are responsible for. So that's the big picture stuff. You know, the immediate things that are raw for Motueka and Tasman are our rivers, our flood protection, and how we will mitigate or fare through, you know, the next major storm event that we might have. And you know, we've just had significant rainfall a couple of days ago, and for people in Motueka they were probably just a little bit of rain, but actually it was probably less than a meter under the Motueka bridge at about 5 o'clock on Tuesday. So we are very vulnerable still in terms of our water table to the next weather event. And so that's the immediate part. And then you'll have, you know, points of interest. So as a Motueka ward councillor, I'd be remiss to say that the Motueka Bridge still hasn't been replaced after many, many promises over many, many years. But I guess for councillors in the government's role, we govern at the mercy of central government, and that reform that's coming through will have impacts on everybody and everything that we do. So that's probably the big challenges.
What are your thoughts on the increasing amount of homelessness and what council could or should be doing about that?
Yeah, I guess it's a challenge. So council will play one part of that. You know, so councils are responsible for infrastructure, for housing supply. We don't control land necessarily. We certainly control the zoning of land to open up for housing, which quite a significant part has been rezoned in Motueka for housing development. But we're one cog in that. So You know, it is all of community. So it's not just government agencies. I know the work that Jane and her crew does at Mutweka Community House is amazing in terms of support for people that need, you know, a hand up and a help. But, you know, so the little bit that council can do, rezone enough land so there's opportunities to build houses, take away some of the rules we have around what we class as suitable housing. So personally for me, having a more worldly view of tiny homes, I love the granny flat legislation that the government are bringing in terms of second dwellings, just having choices of housing, because it is expensive. And if I share the story, Jody and I bought a house many, many years ago for $137,000. A number of years later, our daughter bought the same house and it was over $600,000. And certainly the rate of incomes hadn't increased by that much in that time of Tegan being a young child in the house to buying that as her own. So that's the challenge. So the only way we can help bring down the cost of housing is some relaxation rules about putting second dwellings on existing properties and freeing up land for people to build houses.
Are tiny homes an answer to the housing shortage in Tasman? And how can people get TDC support to have these sorts of dwellings on shared land sites?
Absolutely one of the... It's almost like I knew your questions. Yeah, so tiny houses provide one of those options. And actually, in a time where we're worried about natural hazards and potential flooding and sea level rises over a number of years, actually tiny houses are so relocatable, they also make sense. But I absolutely have seen tiny homes work really well. What I don't think is that they should be exempt from contributing to the costs that everybody pays in terms of Tasman. But in terms of having an easy pathway to know how you get them consented and for them to be more of a permitted activity of right, certainly will be one of the answers to our housing.
Will these changes that the current government are making to the RMA looking positive for people wanting to build homes?
One would hope so. You know, so certainly, I'm sure that's the intention of government. So there's a big push on the rights of the landowner over the rights of others in terms of some of that reframing. But you know, little steps, the granny flats as a permitted activity as a second dwelling will certainly help. And this, you know, the only challenge for me is currently we've had the RMA has been in for a number of years, and I can't remember how many, but it's not just the rules, the law and the acts. It's where they've been challenged in court and the judges have interpreted those interpretations. So the only danger with a clear slate is there is no legal precedent until that's challenged in court. So I absolutely hope there's less rules, there's less red tape, it's easier to navigate. It would be brilliant.
What pitfalls from this new legislation can you see occurring?
I guess it's just going back to that, is the pitfall with any new legislation is that the, you know, government in their writing of law write it, and it's actually the courts that interpret it. So it's not until there's precedent and it's been tested we start finding if there's unintended consequences or things are all good. So over time, that will be tested. So that's the only drawback, I think. The rehashing of the RMA is probably due.
What concerns do you have regarding weatherproofing the region against extreme weather events?
Oh, we just need to stop upsetting Mother Nature. Like it or not, New Zealand lives in a small island at the bottom of the world. And, you know, our impacts and our mitigations in terms of the overall picture of how our climate is changing, you know, is difficult to understand. But in Tasman, we also live in an area that's prone to flooding. It's essentially prone to, in some areas, prone to liquefaction. We've had a history of wildfires in terms of other parts of our district. We're not exempt from AF8 in terms of a major earthquake. So, you know, the key part, resilient communities that know each other and look after each other, and you see that when anything happens, is that neighbours all of a sudden connect, the wider community comes together and helps those people out. We shouldn't need to have a natural disaster to do that. So I can't tell you, and I don't think anybody can tell you, where the next heavy rainfall comes from, whether that happens at a high tide or a low tide. Is there a swell coming in? Is there another earthquake coming? Just look at our last week. But where it makes a difference is communities come together and that resilience about helping each other and that caring for each other. And it's just a shame. It often takes natural disasters to bring that out in people.
Would you like a song break now?
Just have a song break.
Let's have a song break. Pick a song.
Oh, my choice.
Yes.
Oh, I only do one choice. Do you have all the songs?
We have quite a few.
Oh, there's only one artist that I really love. Who do you think that is? Is that an artist?
Tell us.
Let's do Dave Dobbin.
Dave Dobbin.
Let's do Loyal. It must be an unofficial New Zealand national anthem.
Yeah, we got you.
I can't remember last time I thanked you, keeping my distance unintentionally. Too close for comfort, just staying close enough. If I could have more time, we would brainstorm. And I love you tender, but we must walk away. Keeping you on my greeting card file. And if it were different, but you know it ain't. Let's get on with it, love. You call me loyal. I'll say you're loyal too. I know you're loyal. I feel your loyal truth. Call me loyal. I'll hold you loyal too. We are way, girl. Out in the battle, flung far and new, where does allegiance lie? Sometimes when all of your hopes and all of your dreams are too much to value in one moment, and all of us anxious, but why hurry, love?
Welcome back. Tell us, Why did we pick this song?
Oh, look, Dave Dobbin is a legend. He's a New Zealand legend, and that song is probably second to the New Zealand National Anthem in terms of just something special about loving the country that we're in. Love it. I might even sing it occasionally at karaoke, but a little bit poorly, but...
That's beautiful. Now, back to the topic. The Mochiwaka Pool. Is TDC supporting this, and if so, how?
So again, got to be careful. So the previous council supported the Mochiwaka Pool, and it's in the long-term plan. So it's currently in there, and certainly as a person who's about to be sworn in for council again, I've publicly supported the Mochiwaka Pool in terms of that being a project that's really important to Mochiwaka. And it's been important. So I had a long journey at the Mochiwaka Recreation Centre, and there was a design for a pool and a plan in 1986 that would have put it on the back where the netball courts are. So it's not just a little project that's popped up in the last couple of years, 10 years. It's been about 35, 40 years in the making. And, you know, we live in a small island surrounded by water, and we have an ageing population, the use by both young people learning to swim and older adults in terms of physio and rehab. It's just time. So what's council done to date? So we have purchased land in King Edward Street. So that land has been purchased, and it was purchased from the Kramer family, who also had some support for the pool in terms of, you know, that sale. And so we've currently got commercial tenants on part of the land, and the blank part is the site for the Mochiwaka Pool. But like everything, councils are re-elected every term, and long-term plans are reviewed, and so are annual plans. So I certainly hope that it's something that the fellow councillors will continue to support.
Who will pay to have this pool maintained and safety monitored if this continues?
Yep, so there's only one pocket that's that pays, and that is the ratepayers. And funny enough, everything we do, you either pay for it as a taxpayer or you pay for it as a ratepayer. But what, you know, one of the challenges is we have a community facilities rate that everybody contributes to. That pays for the likes of the Mochiwaka Recreation Centre, and also contributes to the ASB Aquatic Centre. So we're already paying a rate towards infrastructure that is in our district. This will give us a shed paid for by the ratepayer, Aquatic Centre in Mochiwaka. So there's no dodging it. Absolutely the ratepayer and those that use it will pay.
Any idea on those estimated costs?
We're in the early stages. So from a past world, I guess in my head, I've got some figures in mind, but there is a lot of water to go under the bridge. Oh, that's a pun, isn't it? but between now and then. So the next stage is around confirming up design, because we've got a capital budget in terms of what's available to build the pool. And part of the design will feed into ongoing operational costs.
How effective is it having the e-bus service running to Mochiwaka, and is it being utilised well?
Ooh, that's probably one of the questions we're going to struggle the hardest with. I'm not sure how well it's utilised, so unfortunately I don't utilise it, and I probably need to learn more about it, because I recently had a shoulder operation and I couldn't drive, and I was planning on taking an e-bus through to Chambers. But when you're 53 and live in a small place called Mochiwaka and never had public transport, just reading timetables are quite tricky. And I struggled to find how I'd get there and back again. So I ended up getting somebody to drive me. But again, public transport is something you invest in for long term. And it's about creating and changing the habit. So I was with somebody today, and we were just talking about how when I grew up, there was lucky if there was one car in families and you walked or biked everywhere. We've sort of, in my generation, everybody's got a car and they drive everywhere, but that will change as people get used to using public transport.
Any idea on what is this costing local ratepayers?
I don't off the top of my head, but I could find it out. So certainly it's a cost that's shared between Nelson City and Tasman District. It's part of the regional transport network we have, but I don't have it off the top of my head.
That's fine. And just before we wrap up, how many people did vote in the election?
Yeah, so we're still low. So in terms of just under 50% of people registered to vote voted in the local body election. So I haven't seen the last numbers, but it really disappoints me. So we live in a country that's fantastic. We live in the best part of that country in terms of Tasman. And we've got this right where we get to elect people to represent us both at local government and central government. And I'm just really worried and concerned that actually we take that right for granted. So there are numerous countries all around the world that would give anything to have a say, let alone vote in the people that represent them. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do as a sector in terms of just having people understand that actually councils aren't just these group of people that sit around a table and talk. We actually make decisions that are intergenerational impact on both today and tomorrow's young people and the future leaders of today, because everything that you do in a day, you would be very hard pressed not to, by the hour, by the half hour, actually connect with something that council controls, governs, regulates, or implements. So it's just really important to get engaged, because, you know, in terms of framing what you want in Motueka or in the Cross Tasman district, you have the absolute ability to influence that. So just don't take voting for granted. Get out there next time and vote. There'll be a general election next year. Get in there and vote. So there isn't a right or wrong choice. Research, read, see who you think's going to do great things that represents your outlook on life, but please vote.
Just before we wrap up again, would you like to see the voting age drop down to 16?
That's a tough question, and I'm just thinking about it as we sit here and going, I probably don't have an issue with it. In terms of, is there awareness, is there interest from 16-year-olds to be engaged in voting, and it's truly the representation of the 16-year-old and not the teacher or the parent that has the influence on their thoughts. So I know of people from past youth councils at 12, 13, 14 that have been really politically engaged, could absolutely read, research and make informed decisions about who they may vote for or what they want. But the same sort of thing, I know a lot of 16-year-olds and even up to 20-year-olds that really have no interest, no background, and probably will just do what their friends or their family tell them to do. So I think it's a bigger discussion, but you know, 16, now there's a lot of responsibilities on 16-year-olds, and if you've got responsibilities, I guess you should have a say.
Thank you dearly, Brent, for taking some time out and coming into the studio for today to have this little interview.
Awesome, it's been great. Thank you for having me.
We're going to leave you now with a song by Neil Young, Ohio, done by Crosby, Stills and Nash & Young. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Soldiers and Nixon's coming, we're finally on our own.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.